Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Welcome to Pit Pass Moto, the show that keeps you up to speed on the latest in motorcycling and brings the biggest names in motorcycle racing right to you. I'm PJ Doran.
And I'm Dave Sawecki.
And this week on Pit Pass, we'll be talking to road racer Michael Barnes. Thank you to Moto America for being a sponsor of Pit Pass Moto this year. It's been a wonderful collaboration. We've truly appreciated our involvement with them and, of course, all the racing action that they provide and we've commented on. Couldn't be happier about it. We look forward to reviewing and talking about their racing this season for a long time to come. Now, here's the latest in industry news. In the off-road world, Dave, what went down?
We had MXGP racing from Italy over the weekend. In MXGP class, 450 class, Antonio Cairoli wins on his home soil with a 2-2 for first overall, followed by Tim Geiser, the points leader, who finished second with a 1-4. Not seen for a while, Clement Desaulles, the Kawasaki rider from France, went 6-1. He won a second moto, so it was good to see him on the podium. So our points standings at this point in the season, Tim Geiser continues to lead with 626 points over Tony Cairoli, who has 553, and Swiss rider Jeremy Sewer sits in third with 535. So that's your 450 class results and standings. In MX2, the 250 class, not seen for a while in the front. Iago Gierts goes 4-1 for first overall. The Belgian rider has been on fire. It's good to see. But the guy we haven't seen in a while finished second. Thomas Kjær Olsen, the Husqvarna rider, went 1-4 for second overall, followed by points leader Tom Vielle. KTM rider went 2-3 for third overall. So your point standings in the 250 class stand as Tom Vielle, the French rider, with 693 in first, followed by Iago Gierts in second with 620 points. And third sits Maxime Renault, the French rider's 505 points. So that's your MXGP results news. Unfortunately, we do have some bad news to share with you folks. Passed away this last Monday, racing icon, flat track guru, mad scientist Babe DeMay passed away last Monday, October 26th. Just sad, sad news. This guy was really just an amazing tuner, bike builder, racer back in the day. Really unfortunate news, PJ.
Rest in peace, racer. He was an incredible human. He was referred to with reverence by many people in the flat track paddock, including my good friend who's passed on as well, Trice Welch, as well as Jake Lewis' own father, who sadly has passed on, Bobby Lewis. They, when referring to Babe DeMay, said he was a man with a lot of info, a lot of knowledge, and racecraft, and just a real pleasure to be around in the paddock. He will be missed.
Yes, he will. I had the I was fortunate to work with Babe directly, actually, over the years in my past life at Wisco, when he was looking for piston solutions for what I used to call his mad scientist engine builds. He would be trying to get the Yamaha engine up to displacement for the 750 class, and we would work some things out with him, and he was just always willing to share and help us. Really, he's just a genuine good guy, and he will be missed.
This week's Pit Pass trivia question is, what year did Harley-Davidson introduce the Sportster model motorcycle to their lineup? We'll be back with that answer after we talk to Michael Barnes. Welcome today to Pit Pass, one road racer, Michael Barnes. Michael, thank you for joining us. First of all, what have you been up to, man? Look forward to talking to you about motorcycles.
Oh, you know, just staying locked down and not really. We've been getting down to the beach, and I've been getting a lot of work done at the house. You know, we got to take our only voyage this whole year out to Laguna Seca for the Bagger race, so that was... That was a fun little trip that really didn't turn out as expected, but we met a lot of great people and we had some good times.
And on that note, Michael, sorry to say it didn't go the way you'd hoped. It happens. It's racing. We know it happens. That doesn't mean you won't give it another effort, I hope. You've got some plans, it sounds like, to maybe do some more racing next year, right?
Yeah, I mean, there's a good chance that as long as they're going to do the Bagger thing, everybody that was involved in the Bassani exhaust program, Dino Tomasi and Steve Watt. They're both tremendous people and really looking forward to working with them again. The bike would have been competitive for sure from the testing that we had done. We ran into some issues and our hands were tied to getting it fixed for the race. But it's an exciting venture. There's a lot of interest in the whole deal. And it kind of opens up the whole spectator demographic a bit, and hopefully some more interest in the road race.
Michael, you've got experience on many, many different types of race bikes over the years, purposely built race bikes, having won the XR 1200 series, I believe. So kind of compare and contrast getting on something that wasn't intended to be a race bike and having to go that pace around a track. What's that like for you?
Well, you know, it's kind of like the XR 1200s. Those definitely were not made for the racetrack, but we certainly turned them into race bikes and gave it a go. I think one of the biggest downfalls to the Harleys were the rubber mounted motors. So it just, without that rigidity of the frame and consistency from turn to turn and, you know, how much torsion goes through the frame, it really throws things off and they wobble and they just do some strange things. So, you know, I think that's the key, is that we have to concentrate on that a little bit more on the handling department. But that wasn't our problem this weekend. It was more on the engine side. But I know these guys and they're 100% towards getting this thing competitive and putting on a good show.
And you've got plans outside of the Baggers series, if it becomes a reality, which quite honestly, we all hope it does. It was well-received from concept all the way to execution. I thought it was an exciting deal, and given more time, I can only imagine professionals like you and the guys you are working with, as well as everybody out there, could turn it up another notch, I'm sure.
Yeah, there was definitely mixed emotions on it at first, but I think as it turns out, and the amount of positive reactions that came from it were pretty welcoming. It was pretty cool. And, you know, I'm not really racing, you know, full-time anymore, but most likely doing the Daytona 200 again, as long as that pans out and doesn't get canceled again.
Get a run for a watch.
Yeah, my old one's getting a little scratched up. I need a new one.
And yet again, Michael, jumping on probably another different motorcycle. And I read a quote that referred to you, and I thought this was pretty clever what they said. It said, "Hard to imagine a rider with more experience getting on an unknown motorcycle and going fast than Michael Barnes." So when you go to Daytona next year, do you know yet what bike you're going to be on?
Well, most likely, as long as everything stars align and the team's still into it, you know, we're a little bit in limbo after getting canceled again in October. But I believe the desire is to do it again, and that would be with the Squid Hunter Racing team out of Daytona Beach. Peter Strack is the team owner, and that's the bike that I was on in March, and we began qualifying, and that's what I was going to ride in October. So assuming that everything stays the same, we should be on the Squid Hunter R6.
So what are you doing, Michael, outside of the racing world? You've got a day-to-day life, same as everybody else, that's probably been deeply impacted this year, same as everybody else. What have you been up to?
Yeah, well, not a whole bunch. No races going on, and done some coaching and whatnot in the past, but everything's kind of just quiet. So I've been working around the house, and that's about it. I got a car I'm working on, and just trying to figure out what the next step is. I'm still in that mode of transferring from racing to what I'm going to do next.
And that is an interesting transition. Lots of guys have had to go through it. Some of them seem to adapt to it quicker. Others struggle. I hope it goes as easily as it can for you, and maybe you get to stay involved in the racing world if you want to. You know, that certainly is your choice. What do you think about what's going on? I mean, Moto America, to their credit this year, really put together what we thought was a strong, given all circumstances, a very strong season with a lot of actual racing going on when other parts of the world really struggled to put it together. And now we've put a foot forward into the world stage with our own Cam Beaubier going overseas. What do you think he's, what are your predictions as a seasoned veteran for Cam? Think he's got a shot over there?
Oh, definitely. He's immensely talented, and yeah, really excited to see him going over there. And it's a proven team, having Joe Roberts had the success that he had this year. And I'm sure they'll just even grow more for the next season. Having Joe move up to the Ital Trans team is also really exciting. Robertino Pietri is involved with that. So it's nice to see some of us from this paddock over there. It's pretty exciting to see Cam going over there, and I believe he'll surprise some people, just like Garrett did in World Superbike.
Yeah, it's been interesting, our the involvement of U.S. riders in any of the world championships has been a little bit blighted, it would seem, in the last, you know, memorable, since really the Ben Spies days. That was the last heyday we had maybe for an American rider. Nonetheless, it's good to see some of our young and bright talent going over there. You mentioned you're working with some racers. Are you working with young guys with this type of stuff as the goal in mind?
No, not really. I'm really not involved too much in the racing circle right now. This year, I really haven't done anything. You know, last year when I was with the quarterly team and you know, being involved with all the young kids on that team, it was always had something to talk about, somebody to help, somebody to give some advice to, but you know, that was mainly for my twins' effort last year. Really kind of just taking it easy and, you know, trying to see where an opportunity might lie for me right now.
That's exciting news. I would call it exciting. It seems there are more opportunities. Doing what we do here, Michael, I get to talk to guys who are finding this out, have found it out. There's some interesting ways to stay involved in the motorcycle world, and it doesn't always mean being at the racetrack. We talked to Corey West last week. That guy rides dirt bikes around and shows people where cool spots are to ride, and he's having a ball doing it.
Oh, yeah. Corey's really put a lot of hard work into that, and, you know, it's nothing better than enjoying your job every day, and that's what I'm trying to do as well, is trying to find something that I'm going to enjoy. And you know, right now the whole motorcycle industry is, everything's just been on hold. So like I said, I'm just trying to focus on getting everything straightened around the house, and got this project I'm finishing up on a car and
building a hot rod.
I actually purchased a 1970 Nova from a good friend of mine who was diagnosed with cancer. His name is Jim Zahorik. And I ran his name on the fairing of my bike when he was still alive. And he was, he passed away about a year after the 200 that I won. And so we'd been spending a lot of time together. He bought this hot rod to enjoy in his final days. And so he needed somebody to take it off his hands. So that's what I'm working on right now.
So that's something that kind of feeds that need to do things mechanical. As motorcyclists, we tend to gravitate towards the garage. I know I do. So I think having that car project has got to be like that.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. And I had to put a window shaker in the garage. So I got an air-conditioned garage to work on the car inside, and it's pretty nice. It's not too bad in the middle of summer Florida. This last couple of months would have been brutal without it.
But working on a car like that, that kind of project is, I always say it's the deepest end of the pool, both, you know, commitment-wise and financially. It's usually quite a bit more than most motorcycle builds. Is that true?
You can just get carried away, you know. So I like everything to be nice and perfect, but at one point I just have to be like, you know, this is just a driver. It's not a show car. I'd take the motor out, which was a new thing for me. I'd never taken a motor out of a car. So I took motor trans out, had to send the motor out, got that back, putting that in, and I'm installing an air conditioning system. You know, it's pretty popular down here in Florida's air conditioning system. So so anyways, that's what I'm trying to get done here.
Are you doing any off-road riding at all in your, I won't say luxury time, but you've got time. Are you getting out and riding in Florida at all?
A little bit. You know, we get together with some buddies up in Daytona, and we ride, you know, like 150s, 125s, and, you know, just bash each other around and, yeah, try to do that as often as possible.
Gotcha. So you're not a closet, I got to get gate drops guy, because we know those guys too, road racers who, when push comes to shove, they'll go catch a local hair scramble or an enduro or anything that involves a flag.
Yeah. Well, I used to do hair scramble, and that's something I've been wanting to get back into, but just haven't gotten around to it. It's on the list to get back into, and I love riding motorcycles, and that's probably what I'm missing most right now, is just not riding all the time. It used to be a date that you had to be at a racetrack, and okay, well, I got to reach this date, so we got to go dirt biking before, have to get in shape and get some time on a motorcycle before you go to a race. And now without a race, it's just like, yeah, maybe we'll go next week. You know, it's not quite as urgent to get out there and ride, but I do miss it.
Well, that's definitely exactly how I feel. I am constantly looking for excuses and ways to get on my bike, particularly before the snow flies up here in the Midwest and sticks around. We've had a couple already. Lucky you don't have to deal with that, so you can ride probably year-round. I'm jealous of you there.
Yeah, we wait for the winter to where we can really enjoy the riding. You know, it can be brutal out here in the summer, but regardless, you know, there's some good places on the West Coast. We have a park out there. It's a Croom State Park, and there's some just miles and miles of trails out there. But there's not much in South Florida. You know, there's a couple motocross tracks, but I haven't been on those in a few years. Try to stay on the ground.
Yeah, I don't blame you there. And there's some cool off-road races in Florida. I know they start, or used to start, let's say, in the previous rendition of off-road racing. They started the off-road series, the East Coast stuff, GNCC stuff starts down there in Florida, doesn't it?
Yeah, yep. There's a bunch of events. And FTR was what I was involved with years ago, and that's probably what I'd step into if I was going to go racing anytime soon.
Right on. Well, Michael, it's been a pleasure talking to you today. Is there anybody you want to thank or mention at all while you got the mic? We're happy to give you a chance to do so as we're running out of time, but we want to give you that chance.
Just a shout out to my beautiful fiance, Ann Roberts, for always supporting me and being by my side through it all. And I really got to thank everybody involved in the King of the Baggers with Bassani Exhaust, mainly Daryl Bassani and Dino Tomasi. His company's the DTF, which makes all the carbon fiber for our bike. And Steve Watt, Maxwell Industries, just an incredible, talented engineer and mechanic. Really looking forward to working with these guys and seeing what kind of weapon they come up with for next year.
That's awesome. And Michael, my apologies, I totally forgot that you were engaged to Ann Roberts. I pitted next to her years and years ago at the GNF when I was a club racer and she was a club racer. So I'd completely had forgotten that. Say hello to her. She won't remember me, but I was pitted next to her. I drove all the way from Iowa, so I was pretty worn out.
Right on. You probably got beat by a girl, huh?
It happened more than once. I also had to race in Elena Meyer's heyday. So saying yeah, I got beat by a girl was kind of a routine for me in the 600 days.
I got beat too. Elena Meyer's beat me straight up, so.
Oh, yeah, she was unreal, as was Ann Roberts. Fast, fast girl. So, cheers to you guys, and thanks so much for joining us today on Pit Pass.
Been a pleasure. Thanks, guys. Talk to you soon.
This week's Pit Pass trivia question was, what year did Harley-Davidson introduce the Sportster model motorcycle to their lineup? The answer, of course, is 1957, the wonderful 1957. A lot of stuff happened that year, Dave, including the Sportster.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, that was the first year for the XL. That was kind of a benchmark engine for Harley-Davidson, unit construction, overhead valves. You know, everything before that was side valve engines, flatheads, and this was a big leap in technology for Harley-Davidson to go forward with the Sportster. They started to add suspension to both ends of the bike, so I thought that was pretty cool.
Yeah, the unit construction was a big deal, right?
Yeah, it was. To have the transmission cast as part of the main engine structure was unique for Harley-Davidson, and actually for most manufacturers back then. Triumph, Indian, was basically an engine with a separate transmission driven by a belt or a chain. So to have all that confined into one casting was, it solved a lot of things, made the engine lighter, stronger, less prone to leak oil.
Yeah, not as hard to set up because those primary drives really can, the external primaries as well as the internals really just make a mess. And it makes the whole machine bigger too. I mean, you were talking adding significantly to the wheelbase.
Yeah, absolutely. Bigger and heavier. And that was one thing about the Sportster. It was a light, fast motorcycle. And it's actually of Harley-Davidson's entire lineup, it's got the highest power to weight ratio of any of their models, except for maybe a modified bagger that goes around a road race course. It's it's not quite the same, but it's always been a little bit of a maligned motorcycle. It's not the big twin, and it kind of gets looked at sideways a little bit, but it really is a unique, neat motorcycle, and it's still around. I think it's maybe still in their lineup. If it's not, it's be a sad day.
No, it's definitely still around, and it's relatively unchanged. At the time that it came out, it's easy to lose track of this now, but at the time it came out, it was the formidable performance motorcycle of its day. It defined what performance was in 1957 until Honda came along with their four-cylinder at the end of the 60s. The Harley was right there with the European models as far as performance went.
Yeah, I would agree. It was head-to-head with the BSAs and the Triumphs and even the Royal Enfields of that era. And it was American-made, so it had everything going for it. And most of all, Elvis rode one. What a better guy to have on your motorcycle to help sell them.
In upcoming news, we've got some road racing to talk about. MotoGP. Well, we've got six guys, essentially, in with a shout at this title. Joan Mir sits atop him with 137 points. It's only 29 points back to the rest of the field, covers the rest of the field. We've got two races upcoming in Valencia, MotoGP this weekend, November the 8th, as well as the 15th. They're doing a doubleheader at that venue. And then the final round will be held in Portugal on November 22nd, right before Thanksgiving. So I am very excited to see how this season plays out, see if anybody can make any substantial statement about their desire to win this title, because it has been back and forth all season without anyone really taking the title by the throat. What's going on, if anything, in the off-road world, Dave?
Very similar. We've got the last two, the final two rounds of MXGP in Trentino, Italy. First one takes place Wednesday, November 4th this week, and then this following Sunday, November 8th. So we'll probably see some titles decided between now and then. There's a big spread between first and second in both of the main classes. So don't expect a huge change, but it's still racing. You never know. Things could change at any moment. Hope everybody gets out and watches MXGP this week.
Thank you again to Michael Barnes for joining us today, and thank you for tuning in. If you enjoyed this episode, make sure to subscribe to us on your favorite podcast app where you'll get alerts when new episodes are uploaded. If you have a moment, please rate and review us as well. We really appreciate it. Make sure to also follow us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and pitpassmoto.com, where you can check out our all-new blog. This has been a production of Evergreen Podcasts. A special thank you to Tommy Boy Halverson, Chris Bishop, our producer Leah Longbreak, and audio engineer Eric Coltnow. I'm PJ.
And I'm Dave.
We'll see you next week. Keep the sunny side up.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.